Ena.
Ena.
Janai.
Janai.
Varana Ashrama.
Varana Ashrama.
Anvitai.
Anvitai.
Yasya Rashtra Pure Chaiva.
Yasya Rashtra Pure Chaiva.
Yasya Rashtra Pure Chaiva.
Yasya Rashtra Pure Chaiva.
Bhagavan Yagya Purusha.
Bhagavan Yagya Purusha.
Bhagavan Yagya Purusha.
Bhagavan Yagya Purusha.
Ijyate Svena Dharmena.
Ijyate Svena Dharmena.
Ijyate Svena Dharmena.
Ijyate Svena Dharmena.
Janai Vana Shraman Vitae.
Janai Vana Shraman Vitae.
Janai Varana Shraman Vitae.
Janai Varana Shraman Vitae.
Yasya Rashtre Pure Chaiva.
Yasya Rashtre Pure Chaiva.
Bhagavan Yagya Purusha.
Bhagavan Yagya Purusha.
Ijyate Svena Dharmena.
Ijyate Svena Dharmena.
Janai Varana Shraman Vitae. Yasya Rashtre Pure Chaiva.
Yasya Rashtre Pure Chaiva.
Bhagavan Yagya Purusha.
Bhagavan Yagya Purusha.
Ijyate Svena Dharmena.
Ijyate Svena Dharmena.
Janai Varana Shraman Vitae.
Janai Varana Shraman Vitae.
Yasya Rashtre Pure Chaiva.
Yasya Rashtre Pure Chaiva.
Bhagavan Yagya Purusha.
Bhagavan Yagya Purusha.
Ijyate Svena Dharmena.
Ijyate Svena Dharmena.
Janai Varana Shraman Vitae.
Janai Varana Shraman Vitae.
Yasya Rashtre Pure Chaiva.
Yasya Rashtre Pure Chaiva.
Bhagavan Yagya Purusha.
Bhagavan Yagya Purusha.
Whose? Rashtre.
Rashtre.
In the state of king or kingdom.
In the state or kingdom.
Pure.
Pure.
In the cities.
In the cities.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Bhagavan.
Bhagavan.
Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yagya Purusha.
Yagya Purusha.
Who is the enjoyer of all sacrifices?
Who is the enjoyer of all sacrifices?
Ijyate.
Ijyate.
Is worshipped.
Is worshipped.
Svena.
Svena.
Their own.
Their own.
Dharmena.
Dharmena.
By occupation.
By occupation.
Janai.
Janai.
By the people.
By the people.
Varana Ashrama.
Varana Ashrama.
The system of eight social orders.
The system of eight social orders.
Anvitai.
Anvitai.
Who follow. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The king is supposed to be pious, in whose state and cities the general populace strictly observes the system of eight social orders of Varna and Ashrama, and where all citizens engage in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead by their particular occupations. Responsibly. The king is supposed to be pious.
The king is supposed to be pious.
In whose state and cities.
In
the general populace strictly observes.
The general populace strictly observes.
The system of eight social orders.
The system of eight social orders.
Of Varna and Ashram.
Of Varna and Ashram.
And where all citizens engage in worshipping.
And where all citizens engage in worshipping.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
By their particular occupations.
By their particular occupations.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The state's duty and the citizen's duty are very nicely explained in this verse. The activities of the government head or king, as well as the activities of the citizens, should be so directed that ultimately everyone engages in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The king or government head is supposed to be the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is therefore supposed to see that things go on nicely and that the citizens are situated in the scientific social order comprised of four varnas and four ashrams. In the Vishnu Purana, it is stated that unless people are educated or situated in the scientific social order comprised of the four varnas, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, And for ashramas, brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas, society can never be considered real human society, nor can it make any advancement towards the ultimate goal of human life. It is the duty of the government to see that things go on in terms of varna and ashram. As stated herein, Bhagavan Yajna Purushaha, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna is the Yajna Purusha. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 5.29, Vaktaram Yajna Tapasam, Krishna is the ultimate purpose of all sacrifice. He is also the enjoyer of all sacrifices. Therefore, he is known as Yajna Purusha. The word Yajna Purusha indicates Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna, or any personality of Godhead in the category of Vishnu Tattva. In perfect human society, people are situated in the orders of a varna and ashram and are engaged in worshipping Lord Vishnu by their respective activities. Every citizen engaged in an occupation renders service by the resultant actions of his activities. That is the perfection of life. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Yata pravrittir bhutanam yena sarvam idam tatam svakarmanam yadapcharya siddhim vindanti manava. By worship of the Lord, the one who is the source of all beings and who is all pervading, man can, in the performance of his own duty, attain perfection. Thus the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Shudras, and Vaishyas must execute their prescribed duties, as these duties are stated in the Shastras. In this way, everyone can satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. The king or government head has to see that the citizens are thus engaged. In other words, the state or the government must not deviate from its duty by declaring that the state is a secular one, which has no interest in whether or not the people advance in Varnashram Dharma. Today, people engaged in government service and people who rule over the citizens have no respect for the Varnashram Dharma. They complacently feel that the state is secular. In such a government, no one can be happy. The people must follow the Varnashram Dharma, and the king must see that they are following strictly. Om Agena Timirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksuramilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitana Manovistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dirati Svaparantikam. It's also mentioned in the Bhagavatam that if people follow the prescribed duties according to their status and their orders of life, the personality of Godhead will be very pleased. Takpumbir dvija shreshta svarna shrama vibhaga shiva svanushti tasvidamasya sangsidim haritoshana. Haritoshana means that will please Hari. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead is never pleased when there is no varnashram, when there is no order in society. When Maharaj Venu was ruling, because there was no central government that was pious, there was a lot of strength, but it was impious. It is described herein that there was a great cloud hanging over the realm. This was due, it is described, to the fact that thieves and rogues were running about, looting, and harassing the citizens. So the same phenomenon is observable in our modern cities. There's a great cloud of smoke hanging over them. It is like the breath of a great evil dragon breathing out its bad fumes. And in some cities, it's very difficult to see the sun. It's said that if you live in Bombay, some research showed, it's equivalent to smoking 17 cigarettes every day. So, due to lack of proper management and impiety on the part of the king, this phenomenon exists, that there is a kind of lawless society, lawless in terms of the laws of God, dharmantu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. These laws, which are the original laws, are not being followed. Even there may be some laws of man, but they are not according to the laws of God. In some places, there is no law and order at all. relatively speaking, in some parts of the world. They're lawless. The police have to be paid to bribe to do something, and judges are bribed. This is due to what Prabhupada describes here as the secular state. This is a very dangerous phenomenon that has arisen in recent times. Even in medieval times, there was some very vague sense of the ruler having some relationship with God. The king and queen in this country were supposed to be representatives of God. And in some incantations, invocations, it's still mentioned. But for all intents and purposes, God has been relegated to the outer darkness and plays no role in government. And this is one of the great causes of turmoil in India. India, which is where the Vedic culture came, where Krishna actually walked 5,000 years ago, wishes to become secular. So there is great turmoil. It's very lawless in this country. Politicians have become very corrupt because they want to remove God from the picture. They want the state to be godless. So this is the meaning of secular state. And this is the great danger of human society. We were discussing this in Vrindavan a little bit, how people don't realize what the real danger is. They think, well, people are wasteful, they're using too much, there's too much industry, there's too much permissiveness, and therefore there's too much crime. But the real problem is that there's no piety, there's no sense of God. So therefore, because there's no sense of this, the people naturally try to do more than they can do. They try to have more than they can have. So as Prabhupada refers here to this 29th chapter, 29th verse of the 5th chapter, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and yet everyone's trying to be the enjoyer. And if everyone tries to be the enjoyer, there must be chaos. Must be chaos. That's the result of secular society. Everyone wants to be the enjoyer. When one understands that Krishna is the enjoyer, this was Prabhupada's peace formula, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam. To first know that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Then, instead of wanting to have more than we can actually have, wanting to do more than we can do, wanting to enjoy more than we can enjoy, which is the root cause of unhappiness and greed in society, then people can begin to be peaceful. The root cause of the problem is this trying to have and enjoy more than is rightfully ours. Therefore, it's said in the Ishopanishad that one should accept only those things which are set aside as his quota and not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. So this is the first verse of the Ishopanishad. Ishyavashyamidam sarvam jatkincha jagatcham jagat tena jaktena punjita madhvidha keshasviranam. Everybody has, according to the laws of nature, only a certain amount of enjoyment. So this is encroachment, and therefore this is the beginning of unhappiness in human society. It happens on the personal level. I try to have more than I can enjoy or rightfully claim, and my senses, my body, my emotions, they all react. I try to lord it over my friends and my family, my community, my country, the world as a whole. And there's so much reaction. It's said in the Bhagavatam that the leader of the society has to accept a fourth of the sinful reactions of the citizens. So even an ordinary person has many reactions. What to speak of persons like King Venu. So, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, to know that Krishna is the ultimate proprietor. It is also the human folly to think that we own everything, or that we can own everything. These are described as the horrible, unbeneficial acts in the Bhagavad Gita, which are meant to destroy the world. So on the macrocosmic scale, everyone thinking he's the enjoyer results in this big dust cloud, results in maybe 20 or 30 armed conflicts that are going on at this moment all over the world. People are being mercilessly slaughtered. But if we understand that this block of land is not mine, it's just artificially drawn with some boundaries that make people say, I'm an Englishman or I'm an American. They can begin to understand that I don't possess this land and then ultimately come to understand I'm not this body. So this is the second component of the peace formula. First, to know that I can't enjoy unlimitedly. Second, to know that I don't own everything actually nothing. Sarvalokamaheshwara, that Krishna is the supreme owner of everything. Suhridam sarvabhutanam. And third, that Krishna is the supreme friend of everyone. We are sometimes, human beings are trying to be the friend of humanity by their good works, by their good charitable works. But only Krishna can actually be the friend of everyone. And in the material world, one tries to have a very dear friend, and in the end, he has to leave his body, or the friend has to leave the body. So that desire to be an ultimate friend or to have an ultimate friend is also always frustrated before it can be fully realized. But the relationship with Krishna, Krishna as the Suhridam, as Sarvabhutanam, as the friend of everyone, is never vanquished. It persists beyond the passing of this body. So this is the third component. And Prabhupada printed this up as the peace formula, you may have heard, in 1966. Suhridam Sarvadehinam. One of the qualities of a sadhu is that he is the friend of everyone. Titiksha Karunika Suhrida Sarvadehinam. Ajata Satrava Shantra Sadhava Sarubhushanam. This is described in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The qualities of a sadhu is that he's always very peaceful. So people are looking for peace, but they don't know where. So in order to convey the idea that peace is due to lack of godliness, Prabhupada also in 1966 wrote the mission statement of the Hare Krishna movement. He wrote it on a little piece of paper, the mission statement of the Hare Krishna movement. And that mission statement was that if people are upset or disturbed to see that society is becoming decadent, degraded, they should understand that their only option is to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the protector, the shelter of everyone, the shelter of the whole cosmic manifestation. This was Prabhupada's translation of the verse that we all know, which ends with Padam Padam Yadvi Padam Atesham Samashritaye Parapalava Plavam Maham Param Punya Yashomarare. Krishna is the shelter, and if one is intelligent, one clasps the lotus feet of the Lord and makes them the boat by which one can cross over the great ocean of material anxiety and take shelter of Krishna. Then one can have peace and can be relieved from the godlessness that is propelling humanity off the edge of the precipice and into the abyss. In the summer of 1966, in pursuance of this peace formula idea, there was still a war going on with the United States and Vietnam. Prabhupada asked us to go with him to the United Nations capital on First Avenue in New York City. So we were all fledgling devotees. I don't think we were even initiated at that time. So he had printed this up, this peace formula, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam, in English. Anyone who knows that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Proprietor, and the Supreme Friend, Gyatamam Shantim Richiti, attains peace from the material miseries, from the pangs of material misery. And then he wrote a little statement about how the need of the day is to understand that God is the origin, the supreme enjoyer, the friend of everyone, and the proprietor of all the universes. And so we were a little bit into the peace movement in those days. Everybody was trying to get out of the army and for other reasons. So Prabhupada asked us to go to the United Nations with him. We walked from the temple up to 42nd Street and 1st Avenue and stood before the huge secretariat. And I've seen pictures of this big glass building. It's about 50 stories high, right on the East River. And so we began to chant the Hare Krishna mantra with Prabhupada, about 12 devotees. And so we chanted. We were handing out the tracts, the peace formula. And after a little while, about an hour, the police came. They told us we couldn't chant. This was the United Nations. It wasn't allowed to sing on the street. So Prabhupada said, all right, we'll just sit down and we'll chant on japa very quietly and we'll hand out the peace formula. So we stayed there for several hours. In fact, I saw not long ago a picture in the New York Post newspaper. Devotees sitting on the sidewalk there, on the footpath right opposite the UN building, chanting. Prabhupada was there. And there was some little article about the Hare Krishna devotees chanting for peace. So Prabhupada was actually very determined to not only see all of his followers attain liberation from material miseries and to go back to Godhead, But also he established, like he did in many other ways, a blueprint for the future, how society could gradually become a varnashram society. It's clear that society isn't going to suddenly develop four orders of ashrams and four orders of varnas. But you'll remember reading perhaps in the first canto that Prabhupada gives a formula for at least a first step for what is the right thing for the Krishna consciousness movement to do in terms of human society. And he says that there should be obligatory laws made initially so that everyone would chant a certain amount of Hare Krishna mantra every day. Everyone would be required to follow the four regulative principles. This is not necessarily something to be implemented in the next 5 or 10 years, but as a first step, everyone should observe fasting, Ekadasi, twice every month. He said this would save governments many, many millions. They would appreciate this particular initiative and benefit from it. That people should be married, men and women should be married, men and boys and girls at a young age, as the girls reach puberty and the men are a little older, 18 to 25. And this would save society from becoming very degraded in terms of so many problems that arise from illicit sex. I think in this country they're making some propaganda about single women with children having to live off the state. This is a big social problem. What to speak of the venereal diseases and so many other diseases and psychological problems that come from illicit sex and abortion. So Prabhupada gave this as a beginning. And it wasn't long ago when Nelson Mandela came to visit the temple in Durban, in South Africa. And devotees there were asking, he's coming, he wants to know what our plan is, what our ideas are, what our philosophy is, what our solutions are. So when he came, we wrote up a little paper and gave him some of these ideas that this illicit activity should be banned, and he was quite receptive. If anyone is a leader who actually wants to benefit society, he can begin to see that there is some value. For example, if a society is secular or godless, then basically everyone's going to become very greedy. And capitalism, in these capitalist countries, I guess every country is capitalist now, try to acquire more. Everyone will be very acquisitive. If you visit the Soviet Union, you'll see that the economy is very wretched, more than India wretched, very, very wretched. And yet everywhere, there are advertisements for blue jeans and Snickers bars and MTV. So people are being lured. It's very sad. There are gambling places all over, prostitution, things that have just arisen. Everybody thinks that capitalism is so wonderful. But now they're finding they can't enjoy that either because they don't have enough money to get these things. To get some blue jeans requires a month's salary. The average wage in Ukraine is the equivalent of £3. That's a monthly wage. The economy is so bad. So there's no solution. People they want all these things because they just feel they have to have them. There was one newspaper article in Russia. Some farmers came to Moscow to protest. They were very disturbed about a year ago. They brought their tractors into Red Square. They came with their implements of work, and they were very disturbed. They were decrying the fact that a great danger was now hovering over the former Soviet Union. And that great danger was that they might have to become a vegetarian nation. When it's economically very difficult to even have meat products, they're so much taken in by this secular and other propaganda that they think that this great danger is going to beset them. They have to become vegetarians. So without the tempering influence of godliness in society, everybody will become greedy. This is a very simple way that everyone can understand that greed, it will become checked as soon as there is a little sense that there is a God and He's the ultimate proprietor, enjoyer, and friend. Just a beginning sense of that, people can become a little more temperate in their habits. And then some of the big problems can begin to fade. When Indira Gandhi was the Prime Minister, there was a shortage of rain There was a big drought. So when she came to Bombay, many of the farmers came out to the airport and they started to throw rocks at her. They tried to stone her and kill her, because there was still some sense, at least in the rural people's minds, that the leader is a representative of God. And if the leader is not acting accordingly or appropriately, then that leader is responsible for their droughts and their famines and all their difficulties. So also it is stated, yad yara charati shrestas tattare ve tarojana saya pramanam kurute lokastaram vartate, that the leaders of society must be ideal, because whatever they do, whatever acts they perform, all society pursues. So ultimately, the leaders of society have got to be influenced favorably by the Krishna consciousness movement. And then gradually, the idea of varna and ashram. So Prabhupada said that, I've only given you half. Before he left us, he said, I've only given you half. You started the Hare Krishna movement, a society of Brahmins, which are the head of society, meant to be head. But the rest of our work to establish varnashram in society has yet to be enacted. So again, he's reiterating here. The sages are reiterating to Maharaj Venu what the king is supposed to be. He's supposed to be the ultimate shelter. Samashritaye parapalavapalam. He's supposed to be the shelter. And one is advised to always take shelter of Krishna. Tasmade kena manasa bhagavan sapratamati shrotavya kirtatavya deha pujaschanichida. One should always worship, glorify, and remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is our protector. And Krishna declares to be the father of all living beings. Pitamam sarvabhutanam. So Krishna and his representative have to become the father and the shelter. In the absence of such leaders, we, as the de facto Brahmins of society, by Prabhupada's mandate, have to act in that role. And that role is carried out by the order of Krishna and his representative, Srila Prabhupada, to distribute his message, his mercy, through his books, through his prasadam, through association with his devotees. In that way, the influence spreads. I got one interesting letter from Prabhupada once. I was writing to the big politicians. I was trying to be like a little bird that lost its eggs and was taking a drop of water out of the ocean to get its eggs back from the ocean, which had taken its eggs away. So I sent Prabhupada some letters. I was writing to the President of the United States and so on. Prabhupada said in his letter back to me, so it's very nice. He said, of course, if you can get some of these leaders to preach for you, that is actual preaching. But otherwise, we shouldn't be interested in such leading men if they are not going to take up Krishna consciousness. He said, our movement is a mass movement. I'll give you the example, he said. There was an election just shortly before that time, and Nixon was running against McGovern. Nixon won the election. McGovern was an intellectual, was a university professor, and had many followers among the elite of the intellectual class. So Prabhupada said, the example is Mr. McGovern. He has so many followers, so-called high-class followers. But he lost. Why? Because he didn't have the support of the common man. Mr. Nixon won because he very cleverly had the support of the common man. So I want, at least this is for time and place, Prabhupada wrote this in 1970, I want our movement to be a movement of the masses. So in this way he's given us this formula, mass distribution of knowledge of books, mass distribution of prasadam, mass distribution of the holy name. And then, gradually, when the leaders see that this is a mass movement, they will want the votes, they will want the popular support, they will come to listen to us. Just like with our Manor campaign, because it's a very powerful grassroots movement, many thousands of people are a part of it, the leaders are becoming a little interested in helping, because their political careers may be at stake. So ultimately there must be piety at the helm of society. Otherwise it will continue to degrade, and there is no solution. Every act that one tries to perform is maya sukaya. It creates another problem, such that the solutions become worse than the problems, as is stated in the Bhagavatam, 7th canto. The solutions to the problems become worse than the problems. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is the only solution. Spiritual solution is the only solution to society. So we'll stop there. Yasya rashtre pure chaiva bhagavan yagya purusha ijyate svena dharmena janai varnashramam vitai. The king is supposed to be pious in whose state and cities the general population strictly observes the system of 8 social orders of varna and ashram, and where all citizens engage in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead by their particular occupations. Any comments or questions?
Sometimes we deal with this. Sometimes it seems that there's a conflict between developing Varnashram and the mass kind of distribution of prasadam and literature and so on. I'm just wondering how we can keep a right balance individually as a society between the development of Varnashram and the mass preaching.
Of course, Prabhupada wanted to establish Brahminical culture in society, and therefore he gave directives that we must do this, distribute his books, because without this, people will not be intellectually aware of Krishna consciousness. They won't be able to be convinced that there is a higher order. And he wanted the core of Krishna consciousness to be very strong and develop. He even gave the system of examinations up to Bhaktivedanta so that there could be Brahmins in society. So first, before there can be anything, there must be a plan. In order for there to be a plan, there must be a brain. In order for there to be a brain, there must be a head with a brain in it. So there has to be a head of society. And Prabhupada was obviously establishing the Brahmins, or the head of society, first, because that's the first step. At the same time, he gave many instructions on how his communities outside the urban center should be developed, how people, devotees, could make their own clothes and shoes and paper and become completely self-sufficient and gradually establish the system of varna and ashram. So many of these things which have been given by Prabhupada, and there are many other things, may take hundreds of years to realize, because Prabhupada, as he said, I gave you the structure, now you have to fill it out. He left that to us. So according to time, place, and circumstance, one may find oneself on a farm and one may find oneself in a city. When I was at Bhaktivedanta Manor in 1973, I wrote a letter to Prabhupada asking for some devotees to come and help us cultivate, do a little gardening. There wasn't so much. Very little, I mean, in one sense. But Prabhupada wrote back and he said, our experience is it's very difficult to find anyone to come and live on a farm. We have that experience in New Vrindavan. So you should try to get the people of England to come and cultivate at the manor. Not that someone should come from America. So our experience is, because so many of us are city folk, we can't really go out and live the hard, austere, self-sufficient life of working on a farm. Because it requires a certain type of austerity that we city dwellers are not used to. But Prabhupada said that this should happen, and gradually it's happening. So, and the other thing is that we're not living in those areas lives of complete self-sufficiency. So in one sense, we can't preach it, that we're following it. We can't be perfect examples, but we have our philosophy. We can say that we're moving in that direction, and we have some levels of self-sufficiency in some rural communities, maybe 40 or so, in which philosophically we're convinced that whether it takes 20 years, 50 or 100 years, that this is the position we want to have, complete self-sufficiency and live according to Varnashram principles. But first, we have to start somewhere. The longest journey begins with the first step, someone once said. I think Prabhupada quoted it. And in the urban centers, people have to be conversant with the philosophy, with the knowledge of what Varnashram is before it can go forward. So at least the knowledge of Varnashram and Krishna consciousness is being propagated. And when this knowledge is entrenched in human society, it can provide the foundation for going forward.
Said that in this age of Kali, we're all born as Shudras, but then by proper training, we can become qualified to be a Brahmin. And I'm wondering, if Varnashram is to be established, then is it going to need to be sort of a society within a society, like to train people as Kshatriyas and Vaishyas? Because this society is basically training people to be Brahmins.
Right. Yes. And of course, once one comes to Krishna consciousness, as you pointed out, the so-called sudra mentality of everyone, Kala Sudra Sambhavan, is changed. Tattenu kampam su samikshamano vunjaneva makritami parkam. It's also mentioned that aho vato shvapatra togarayan ajivagrivartate namatuvyam, that even if a person's born in the family of a dog eater, once he takes to Krishna consciousness, he becomes worshipable. So the society within the society, or the varnashram societies that Prabhupada has enacted, are societies in which one can change from any so-called position. And actually, because Bhagavad Gita says that it is according to varnashrama vibhagasha, that it is according to quality and activity, guna karma, that one's varna and ashram is actually established. So in these societies within society, we have full opportunity to develop this kind of society. And the reason is that in order for people to follow, just like they follow the leader, yad yad acharya chi shreshtas, similarly, when there's an example of a society, people will tend to follow that society. They want to see there's a model, a working model. And if that working model also propounds the philosophy of how this circle can be widened to a larger community, then they can begin to understand that there's some possibility. So in this way, the circle of Krishna consciousness can widen. For example, there's the International Society for Cow Protection, run by a devotee named Balabhadra in America. So he networks with a lot of other groups who have joined his society. And these are also, in different ways, trying to reduce the greed level. Most of them aren't spiritual, but they're sort of groping blindly towards a kind of spiritualism, or at least ethical vegetarianism and animal rights and simpler living and so on. So Prabhupada's formula of simple living and high thinking is one that people can respect. They can come to respect if they can see it. They can respect it even if they don't see it, but if they see a microcosmic cell as such a thing, then they can begin to think it's possible. So there's different ways that people can perceive things. One is by direct perception, like pratyaksha. One is by logic, anima, by seeing that it sounds good, so it may work. And the other way is by shabda, just by hearing it come from authorities, like we do. We understand that the Vedic authorities have the ultimate answers to everything. So from that kernel of knowledge, we can expand a varnashram society. But for others, they may need to hear it explained logically. And even more so, because everybody is so dull in Kali Yuga, they may actually have to see it before they can believe it. That's why people watch television in Kali Yuga. They can't absorb anything. And that's why all the teaching has to have so many audiovisual aids. So if they can come and experience a model of Krishna consciousness, how people can actually live, then they can begin to get the sense that all of society can live more simply, they can be vegetarian, they can have Krishna in their lives, they can simplify, then they can still be happy. So by the model, we can also hope for the macrocosmic situation to change. Does that answer your question?
Are you already going to present this model of financial system for the centennial company?
More. I think the centennial will promote it. It will obviously try to promote the varnashram society. But it's a long-term project to establish places where there's complete self-sufficiency and this kind of varnashram society is established. So it'll be difficult in 2 years to develop something in the level of a working model. But the plans for the centennial are to try to promote more and more of this philosophy. Yeah. Yes.
Maharaj, I was talked to at the board a few months ago. I got a lot of problems on the table. And he said to me something which was quite surprised. He says, we form as the society's form. He says, I can understand that there's so much compassion, you know, alcohol, eat so many different things. So the devotee paid himself in that. pray them. They say, preach, they say, just wash themselves. So I wash, do we live? That's precious hours over this, and I wish to pray myself and not witness our judgment.
You mean blame ourselves in the sense that we're just watching and we're not doing anything about it? Boy, the directive of a devotee is to alleviate suffering in human society. And devotees, they don't discriminate that people are good or people are bad, just like Prahlad Maharaj. He didn't see in terms of friends and enemies. So this is the mark of a saintly person. Ajata Satarashnati has no enemies. So there's a Christian aphorism that says one should hate the sin, not the sinner. So similarly, the Panditak Samadarshana vision means that we don't really discriminate or see that we dislike one person or that we blame some person, even if he's very sinful. In fact, the personality of religion himself, when Maharaj Parikshit came to him and asked him, who has tortured you? Remember, Dharma was standing on one leg. Who has done this to you? And then he went on to say, well, there are many reasons why things happen. There's the force of karma. There's the limit of our own knowledge to know what happened. There are our own sinful activities. And in the end he said, but actually one who blames the sinner, who points the finger and names a particular sinner, he's as sinful as the sinner himself. So he wouldn't name Kali, who had tortured him, because he said, I'll get the same reaction by singling out that sinner as I will by doing the same sin he did to me. So the nature of a devotee is to see that this is due to forces that are very often beyond. It's the force of Kali Yuga. It's the Manda Sumanda Manato. It's Manda Sumanda. Everybody is unfortunate in Kali Yuga. And there's so much karma. But Lord Nityananda exemplified the mercy a devotee has to have when he spared the lives of Jagai and Madai. He should have been killed, in one sense, by the Lord. But he didn't blame them. He begged Lord Chaitanya to stop from killing them. And Prabhupada writes about that in the purport to the verse, Namam Duskritanam Mudha. He says in the purport first that, well, the verse says that these people cannot ever come to Krishna consciousness, right? They will never come, these mudhas. But in the purport, he narrates this incident about Jagai and Madai. He says how a devotee's mercy enables such sinful activity to be changed. So the Majjhima Adhikari distributes knowledge to everyone indiscriminately. And he doesn't blame the individuals, and he does take it upon himself. Just like Vasudeva Dutt, he said, let me suffer the reaction of everybody so that they can be saved. And Lord Chaitanya was so happy, he immediately liberated everybody, liberated the whole universe. So we should think that we're inadequate and it's due to our shortcomings. At least this is the advanced devotee should think like this. He should think that I want to save these suffering souls, I want to reverse this trend of sinful activity, even if I have to suffer myself. So I think I'm going over by 55 minutes. I'm very sorry. No, 35, 25. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.